So, and certainly being respective of everyone's time. Welcome to the Institute and Donors Trust Call today, which is a national dialogue for women business owners. I want to thank each of you for taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us today. I know how busy every one of you are. We want this to be a lively discussion, not a political discussion. The Institute is a 501c3 nonprofit public charity, and we do not endorse legislation, nor do we endorse candidates. We focus on education. The Institute for Economic Empowerment of Women's mission is to empower women economically, socially, and politically. Our board of directors is made up of women business owners from all across the country, and every one of them are on this call today. They are Sandy Abalos from Arizona, Sylvia Medina, Idaho, Janet Harris Lang, Florida, Martha Parker, New Hampshire, Kathy Bennett, Missouri, Desma Reed Coleman, Michigan, and Valerie Shondell, New Jersey. So you can see we're spread all across the country and have a lot of representation fully from Arizona to New Jersey. I'd also like to point out that we have 32 states represented on the call today and several national women's business associations and some local ones as well. They are Marcia Firestone with the Women Presidents Organization, Helen Hahn with the National Association of Women Business Owners, Janet Harris Lang, National Women Business Owners Corporation, Anne Maria Maida, Association of Women's Business Centers, plus several Women's Business Center leaders from around the country, Monica Smiley, Enterprising Women Magazine, and Nancy Zerbakken, Kansas City Council of Women Business Owners. With this dynamic group, we are reaching thousands of women virtually through their representation of their associations. Many of you know that I wrote a training manual in 2006, Power Tools for Women Business Owners, and traveled to 14 cities in 2007 and 2008, educating women on ways to build their own grassroots network, how to get to know their legislators, how to write opinion editorials, and the importance of being involved in public policy. The Institute then formed Peace Through Business, which includes educating, mentoring, and helping women in Afghanistan and Rwanda build their businesses and rebuild their countries. Just one example of our success is Taj Surat, who owns a soccer ball manufacturing firm in Afghanistan. We always point to Taj because she's just so special. They are all special. But when Taj came to us in 2007, she had no business plan, couldn't tell you her annual revenues, and was struggling to get her soccer balls into the marketplace. She had about 30 women who worked for her at that time. Today, she has over 300 employees, and her annual revenues have increased 400%. And she's running for parliament in Afghanistan. And we're so proud of her. We hope she wins. We're not endorsing her at all, but we really believe that what she is doing is great for her, her business, and for her country. So the Institute has a mission to educate women in developing countries, but also in the United States. The purpose of this call is to have a discussion of where women business owners are headed in the economy. For example, what are the education tools women business owners need to help take them to the next level? What do we need to look out for over the next 5 to 10 years? And I know Susan is going to give us those answers. And how do we need to prepare ourselves to tackle these issues that keep our businesses viable? How do we position for the future? And how do we all come together and work to improve our economy? What we hope to gain from this discussion today is twofold. Start the discussion with all the women business leaders on this call on ways to identify educational programming that will help us help our businesses and help America. And this is just the beginning of the discussion. Second, we are planning 3 breakfast meetings in the month of August to continue this discussion. August 11 in Kansas City, August 21 in Anaheim, California, and August 31 in Little Rock, Arkansas. If you have business associates in these areas and would like to let them know, or if you'll be in these areas, let us know for reservation purposes, and we'll get you on board. Before I introduce Susan Stewart, you need to know how to get into the queue to join the discussion once Susan finishes her remarks. Just press star 1 and you will be on hold until we get to you. You will still be able to listen to Susan while you're in the queue. At this time, let me introduce you to Susan Stewart. I emailed all of you her full bio yesterday, so let me summarize. Susan is a financial expert who appears regularly on television, radio, at speaking engagements, and in print media. Her appearances include the CBS Early Show, Bloomberg Radio, and the D.C. Maryland local CBS and NBC affiliates. She's been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, Money Magazine, Investors Business Daily, and Financial Planning Magazine, and contributed articles for More Magazine and for the website womensvoicesforchange.org. Susan is CEO of Charter Financial Group, a registered investment advisory firm specializing in stock and bond management for large pension firms and wealthy individuals. She began her career as a lawyer, but later joined Merrill Lynch and was licensed as a stockbroker in 1985. Her career path includes stints at Smith Barney, now Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, Bank of America Trust Department, and Wachovia Trust, which is now Wells Fargo. Since founding Charter in 1996, Susan has generated an outstanding track record investing portfolios for wealthy individuals and for institutional clients such as Chrysler Corporation and New York City, Seattle, and State of Maryland Employees Retirement Systems. Through her expertise, Charter was named one of the initial portfolio managers for the Wilshire Maxim Diversity Mutual Fund, launched and distributed through Merrill Lynch in the summer of 2008. Susan is a graduate of Ursinus College and the Dickinson School of Law at Pennsylvania State University. She is an inactive member of the bar in the District of Columbia, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. She's an avid athlete, having played field hockey, basketball, and lacrosse through college, and is a member of her high school and college sports hall of fame. She's a member of the United States women's lacrosse team. And, you know, you probably just don't want to deal with her if you're on the field with her. So I'll turn this over to Susan, and thank you, Susan, so much for being with us today.
And thank you, Terry, for having me. What a powerful group of people and far and wide throughout the country that you've gathered here today. It's quite impressive. First, I'd like to thank everyone for attending our call. As business leaders, you have firsthand knowledge of the challenges presented by our current economic environment. We'd like to hear from you on what women business owners want and need to be even more successful. Are there educational programs you can think of that would assist your efforts? We'd like to hear from you about how we might get women business owners to develop tools to turn their concerns into greater success. I'm a small business owner. And like you, I strive each day to make sure my bottom line squares. Personally, in my business, I'm very focused on making more than I spend. And while that's easy in abundant times, it's tough when things get in tougher economic times. The crisis of the last couple years likely forced some changes in your organizations. It did mine. As we hit the downturn in 2007, I was forced to reduce headcount, not so much because my balance sheet and income statement wasn't working then, but because I couldn't see what was ahead of me, and I was very concerned, and I knew I had to pay attention to making my revenues exceeding my expenses, no matter how bad things got. You know, these have been tough times. Making them even tougher, access to capital has become very difficult for small businesses. In a special report in the Wall Street Journal recently entitled The Credit Crunch That Won't Go Away, it cited that financial credit to entrepreneurs is still at the lows that were established in the early part of 2007 as the recession took hold. As my business struggled, I knew I had to stand on my own two feet. And we've been hearing the same thing from small businesses out there, and we'd like to hear from you. Have you had problems with access to capital? If so, what have you done as a workaround? Can you share your successes with others so that they might learn as well? Just to clarify, I'm simply a concerned business owner, and I'm not interested in laying blame. I'm interested in educating and engaging small business owners to think about the financial health of our households. our businesses, our cities, states, and nations. It doesn't matter how we got here. What matters is what we do about it. I've been consulting with business owners from all walks of life, learning how hard it is to navigate in this environment. These are uncharted waters. We have not been here before. This is a time when entrepreneurs need to come together in support and collaboration to help one another through mentoring and education. That is why we're all on this call together. Your stories, your perspective, they're important to this mission. You are on the ground. You're experiencing business at a level that few understand. What are some factors that are helping you? What are hindering you? Let us know. I talked to the owner recently of a business who provides security guards for retail establishments. She's seeing increased demand. She needs new hires. She needs more people. However, her credit lines have been sharply reduced, and she's struggling with how to bridge the gap between accounts receivable and wages that are due. Another instance, I talked to a family-owned restaurant chain that has been in business for over 20 years and has over 150 employed workers. They've been operating at a loss for the last 2 years, and they've exhausted all financial resources, just trying to hang on for the recovery. They do not have ability to provide health insurance for their workers because their premiums have gone through the roof, and they're considering closing down all 7 restaurants. The fact is, this is the recovery. We are in it now. This is the new normal. You can't just survive. You need to learn to thrive in this economic environment. If you're prepared to operate in this environment and things turn out better, you'll be able to adjust in a moment. On the other hand, if things turn out worse than expected, you need to be ready to adapt. Fact is, we're on shaky ground. This is the time for us to be resourceful, to slow spending, and to save. We all need to get back to basics in our business, just as we've done in our personal lives. It's also really hard for women business owners to deal with heavy regulatory burdens and therefore to understand how important it is to be involved in public policy. I know Terry says it, and it's on the Institute's website. If you run a business and you're not involved in public policy, then public policy will run your business. Donors Trust and the Institute need you to tell us what we can do to help you grow your business, and we want to help you engage in public policy conversations. How can we make that happen? Beyond this conference call, the Donors Trust and the Institute are hosting a series of breakfast meetings to hear the voices of women business owners on issues facing their businesses. It's critical that entrepreneurs understand the economic circumstances and how those circumstances impact their business. We encourage you to seek out the facts and gain an understanding of relevant economic issues. Then you can make educated and informed business decisions. Just imagine what decisions you might have made if you had understood in advance the magnitude of this economic downturn. Taking measures to improve public policy in this country is like motherhood, baseball, and apple pie. I look forward to your conversation, and with that, I'll kick it back to Terry.
Thank you, Susan, very much. We'll begin with Q&A, as I see several are lined up in the queue already. And remember, if you want to ask a question or make a suggestion, press star 1. Please tell us your name and your state, and then ask your question or make your suggestion. And we'll go with our first caller. And we're trying to take you off mute. Who's our first caller?
Hey, Terry. It's Sandy Avalos. I'm here from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm a CPA. And my question for Susan is, what did she see? What's the economic outlook going forward for the economy at large? I mean, we are in a situation right now that few know where we're going. So my question is, what can take us out of this downturn? What does she see as opportunities for recovery? And on a global basis, with the aging of the boomer population, especially with women business owners going forward, what do we need to look out for? What should we be preparing for?
Well, thank you, Sandy. You raise a couple points. In terms of our outlook, you know, we seem to be sort of teetering on a precipice here where we're looking at some burgeoning economic expansion. And so we're on one hand often worried about inflation and, you know, inflation hitting the system. And on the other hand, we in the next breath, we're worried about deflation. So we've had some good recovery since climbing out of the recovery, but it seems to maybe have stalled. We've seen the GDP numbers for the second quarter come in lower than expected, and we're seeing downward revisions. In terms of demographics, you know, what everybody knows, we have the aging baby boomer population, this big bubble moving through society, and it's had profound impact on our country. The biggest and easiest and most direct impact has been on Social Security, and that system is facing great difficulty. In 1960, there were 5.1 workers for each retiree. Today, there are 3.3 workers for every retiree. The system looks to begin running deficits in 2016, and it looks like reserves will be exhausted if we do nothing by 2037. So there are a number of things, and there's real debate here about how we grow our economy. Do we keep spending more money on stimulus dollars, and is that having the impact intended? Or do, you know, there's been talk about tax cuts and tax raising are on the table, but these are certainly all different and difficult decisions to make. One thing that is an astounding statistic that we'd like people to talk about and focus on a little bit is the fact that we've really been spending a lot of money over the last decade, certainly, from the days when we ran a surplus in early 2000. We as a nation have been spending much more than we're taking in. And in 2008, for the first time, we spent $1 trillion more than we made in fiscal year 2008. And that has very big implications for our country and for our future and for maintaining our economic power in the world. So those issues are important.
Thanks, Susan. And thanks, Sandy, for weighing in and being with us on the call. Next question.
Hi, I'm Candy Strait. I'm from Bloomfield, New Jersey, and I first want to thank Terry and Susan for having this call and getting everybody together. As somebody who's been an independent consultant for the last 10 years, or actually 12 years, I've got to say this is the toughest economic environment I've ever witnessed, and I even witnessed the 70s when I was actually employed, which was a tough environment, but this is much tougher. And one of the things that I wanted to thank you for saying and just reinforce it to everybody is to become involved either locally or statewide in public policy. And what happened to me in the last year, I was asked by some friends on our Board of Education, just in our community, if I would start attending some Board of Education meetings just to review, because they, as members, saw that the pension costs were going out of, you know, that they couldn't afford them any longer, and the health care costs. And so I've tried to help them, and I just want to point out, and maybe Susan will comment on it, you know, we have a ticking time bomb here. And I'm 62. As the population ages, and I hope to continue to stay employed at least into my 70s, to be honest about it, as the population ages, we have these contracts for pension contracts and health care contracts that could possibly bankrupt us. And it's something that I think on a local level, we all need to educate ourselves as women business owners, as concerned citizens of our communities, so that we know what the liability is and we start to come up with common sense solutions to address the issue. So thank you.
Thank you, Candy. You know, you raise an interesting point, and our our state of our balance sheet is in difficult situation. We owe, as of March 2014, $14 trillion as a nation, and you could look at many states in the nation that are struggling with similar deficits, certainly not as large, but relatively speaking, large deficits. And the problem with debts and deficits is they're strange animals. The debt belongs to every citizen, but nobody's really responsible individually for fixing it. And it's a tough situation because it's hard for, I think, our elected officials of any stripe to do well in and be reelected and be elected if they're talking about cutting spending. It's very difficult. So I think one of the starting points is to focus the discourse, in a non-political way, to just say, hey, do we care about this? Is this something that concerns us? Our debt is now 60% of our GDP. At $14 trillion, it's 16% of our GDP, and that makes it better than only six other countries in the world. So while we look at Greece and think that we're doing well and they just didn't keep their house in order, we have to take note that this is an issue really affecting us. And I think pension liabilities and benefits are certainly a huge problem that states are just now taking note of and dealing with. And we've seen around the country some governors taking action. But, you know, it's hard. Germany right now is an interesting case study for us because they have not had the recovery, the economic growth that we have had in the recovery, but they're doing modestly better. And largely they've brought down their unemployment to the rate it was pre-crisis. And that has attributed in large part to the fact that they kept everyone working but asked everyone to take a pay cut. And so it was a shared burden across their nation. And so it's an interesting paradigm of how one might look at it. They're now talking about cutting spending and austerity measures, and it actually seems to have left their economy in relative strength.
Thanks, Candy, for your question, and Susan, appreciate the response. Let's go to the next question.
Hi, this is Lisa Dolan from New York.
Hey, Lisa.
My question is, I own a security company. I've been in business for 13 years, and I've never had a problem with access to capital. This year, we had to renew our line of credit, the business line of credit, and it was such an arduous, torturous journey, and it still isn't over. And we have great credit, stellar, both personal and in the business. And I really have to wonder what's really going on. They say they're giving the banks the money to help small business, but yet they're really not lending any money. They're doing everything they can to stunt that growth, because if they would give it to us, we'd be able to hire more people. And I just wonder, you know, how's that being exposed? Because I don't hear that. You know, on TV, you don't hear these things. And when the politicians talk, they say, oh, yes, we're going to help the small business and the money's going to be there. But in reality, it's not. I could understand if we had some questionable credit, but absolutely not. And we're doing great, and we employ over 140 people. So I'm really kind of wondering what the truth is out there and why it's not really being exposed and how to help people like us.
Lisa, thank you. We are hearing these stories over and over again across the nation, and it's sad that it seems what's happening is that, you know, banks are holding on to a lot of their capital, and I think some of that is, you know, they're run by humans who experienced the crisis as we did. I mean, I've retrenched, and I think there's a certain amount of fear that we'll get to that cliff again, and they want to be prepared. But I think another part of it is that, you know, we as small business owners are just not a united voice, and we're easier for banks and industries to take for granted. So that's why this is such a powerful forum that Terry has brought together and that Donors Trust and the Institute is, let's percolate this and take note that these are terrible times because, you know, we've got, you know, capital has constricted, regulatory burdens have gone up, and you're right. If you could hire, if you could expand, if you could keep running at full capacity, that would be greater tax revenues. There'd be more employed people.
Mm-hmm.
It would be all a net positive. So this is some of the things that have our economy stuck, I think, and that it would be great for us to find a measure where we can come together and bring along other business owners and make our voices heard.
Thanks, Lisa. Next question.
Hi, this is Elaine Lafferty from New York, and thank you so much, Susan. I don't know if this is within your area of expertise or knowledge, but I'm wondering if you know anything about what is going on, a little bit in line with Lisa's question about community banks. I've heard that there are some new regulations coming down that are hurting community banks, a little bit maybe overbroad on the regulatory velocity coming out of Washington. I mean, I know I own a business in Long Island, and if it was not for the loan that we got 2 years ago from a community bank, Bridgehampton Bank, we'd not be in business. And yet we're hearing just locally that these banks are feeling really, really squashed, like they've gotten a little bit in the line of fire, and that they're not J.P. Morgan, they're not Chase, you know, they're not the big banks, and yet they're being hit with some of the same stuff that the financial institutions that got us into some of this mess are rightfully getting hit with. Just wondered if you know any more about that or what those regulations might be.
Well, Elaine, thank you for your question, and I'm specifically don't know about community banks versus other banks, but I will say that FinReg and the legislation that's passed, there's a great concern about essentially the impact of something that will require banks to hold greater capital. In other words, they'll be able to leverage their funding less. So make less amount of loans for their capital they hold. And I think that's a big problem for small banks. It's a big problem for all banks, and it really means a contraction in the money out there available to businesses of all size. So, but I don't specifically have an answer for you on the community banking thing.
Yeah, you know, we'll go to our next question, but I have to tell you that I've had a number of conversations with community banks in Oklahoma and Texas, and they are loaning money. And they're not having any problems right now with – they do have some regulatory problems that I won't go into because they're lengthy. But they have money to loan, and they're loaning it. I understand there's a major problem out there on access to capital, but it seems like when I talk to the bankers, maybe they're telling us one story and the business owner's getting another one, and that's a good possibility too and something that maybe we should do a little checking on. Let's go to the next question.
Hi there. This is Anne Marie Almeida, and I'm the CEO of the Association of Women Business Centers, which works with 155,000 women entrepreneurs a year and an entrepreneurial training program for emerging leaders in Latin America, Africa, and Eastern Europe. And I am with Terry and you, Susan, about we need to have competency in leadership and entrepreneurship and public policy advocacy. But what I'm curious about are what are the tools and the assets, both quantitative and qualitative, we have to leverage to bridge or to try to attempt to solve these either access to capital problems or networking or mentoring problems. So I'm curious, Susan, about your incredible experience of what's available for this landscape of women entrepreneurs in the United States or even overseas.
You know, I think in terms of, I think organization like yours and like Terry, they have to be sort of the repository of the, the gathering of you know, consensus to move forward to change things on a system-wide basis. And certainly, you've with your educational programs and your mentoring, I think those are powerful things to help bring small businesses and women-owned businesses along so that we might learn best practices from each other. You know, the challenges that we're talking about on a system-wide basis is our challenges that we all face as citizens and as a nation, and that's more difficult to see other than that the first step to this is to take note of the issues and say, this is important. I mean, it's not going to affect my next 10-hour, 12-hour day, but it has going to have impact for me for the medium term and the longer term, and it's something that needs to be addressed together.
Yeah, I also we'll go to the next question. Thank you, Maria, for your question. I think that when I talk with women business owners around the country, that their comment is usually, I need to understand more about how the system works. And if I understand how the system works, then I feel like I can be more effective. So I'll just put that out there as something that that I think we do need to talk about is, you know, how does the system work and how do you be a part of the system and make the system better and more effective? And with that, our next question.
Hi, this is Wanda Williams. I'm with I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hey, Wanda.
Hi, everybody. I have two things on the loan. I work directly with the SBA here in Indianapolis, and any time I have, I've never had a problem, but they're real good at helping you get loans. That might be another area that you might want to hit. And then my second, it's really not a question, it's just rather a statement. I've been around for several years. I guess you'd call me a baby boomer. My business is almost 20 years old. And back in 1996, I founded NABO for Indiana. And after working 4 years with NABO, with getting it to become a chapter and finding 30 women business owners and doing everything in my power to keep it running, then after 4 years, I decided it was time for me to concentrate on my business and not NABO, you know, pass it down, let the next person become president, which she did. She did an excellent job. And then the next person came along, and she decided that she'd rather be the founder or someone else be the founder. So she just more or less took it over. And when I tried to get an organization like National NABO, National Association of Women Business Owners, to help me with this problem, they just snubbed their nose at me. And women business owners do not work together as a team. This is what I see and what I've seen in the past. The feeling I got from NABO and people yelling at me and telling me, well, you can't have your web page. I had, not my web, but my email address was WCCNABO because I was NABO for 4 years, and that's WCC is also my business, you know. And for them to threaten me with lawsuits and whatever, it just, the reason none of this works is because nobody works together.
Thanks, Wanda. And that is what one of these calls are really all about in our breakfast sessions coming up, is that, you know, we all need to work together, join hands.
You know, but the leaders of NABO, Terry, I've known you for years.
Sure. Wanda, I think I lost you. We need to go to the next question. But anyway, I understand what Wanda's saying, and we all need to join hands and work together and make this country better, and make sure that women are educated and have the public policy knowledge in which to make it a better America. Next question. We're not getting our next question.
Oh, it must be me. I didn't get any signal.
I think they came back to me.
Okay. Nancy, I hear Nancy Zerbaki.
I'm on here.
Okay,
yeah.
Nancy, you're up.
Okay. Nancy Zurbuchen in Kansas City, Missouri. My company is Motional Multimedia. This is my 26th year in business, and I have a long history of working with women business owners and organizationally and individually. Since we're talking about money and credit and trying to find loans and that type of thing, I wanted to make the statement and then ask a question about the Credit Card Reform Act that has had so many really horrible unintended consequences for small business owners, and I don't think anybody saw it coming. I don't think any of the groups I work with talked about it. NFIB didn't see it coming, and what I'm talking about is the fact that there was a year in between that allowed the credit card companies to raise rates and do basically whatever they wanted to, so that when the rules started, they had already shifted the playing field, okay? So for small business owners, and I'm speaking of a number of people I've talked to, and including myself to a certain extent, is that even certainly the sole proprietors and the micro businesses, rely on personal credit cards. But even bigger, more substantial businesses still rely on credit cards for things that we used to get from the bank, like, cash flow, money for operations, lines of credit, that kind of thing. Now, then when you take away the option of the credit card because, you've gotten notice that they're raising your credit rate for no reason, again, like a prior caller said, great credit, no problems, pretty soon they can't even go to their fallback position, which was credit cards, to finance these portions of their business. So that's what I see happening, and that was really and continues to be very devastating for small business. So I am wondering, it makes me concerned that, when the legislator gets involved in trying to fix something, there's always these huge unintended consequences, it seems, and this was particularly bad for small business owners. What do you see in that arena as far as, credit card credit and so on?
Nancy, thanks for bringing that up. This is exactly why we're having these calls, because we need to hear about these instances where there's some big impact that isn't necessarily percolating up into consciousness for those that aren't experiencing that. I think you raise a good point. I think a lot of women businesses use as a fail-safe their personal credit cards or some credit business credit cards, and so that is something that uniquely impacts women businesses. I don't I'm not an expert on credit, and maybe that raises a good issue that as we go out into our breakfast that we intend to hold across the nation, that we make sure we have somebody who can address specifically credit card and banking and those kind of issues.
And actually, Susan, one of our board members, Sandy Abelos, who was, I think, our first person to ask a question, serves on a community bank, and I think can certainly answer some of those questions on community banks and credit cards. And women entrepreneurs, unfortunately, do have to use their credit cards a great deal for access to capital. And so this is an issue for many of us, and it's one that we should certainly be talking about, and I'm sure we'll hear more of. We have 20 people in the queue to ask questions, so if you will try to pare your question down quickly or your suggestion down quickly, that would be good, as we only have about 20 minutes left in the call. So let's go to the next person and allow her to ask her question. Who do we have up next?
Terry, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, it's Marsha. I didn't know if it registered. Okay. Marsha Firestone, president, founder of the Women Presidents Organization. There's so many problems for small businesses right now. I don't know where to begin. Taxes, health care costs, car checks still lurking in the background, My concern is that the focus has been on corporations, large corporations, publicly held corporations, and not on the needs of small business. What can we do about it? I feel so frustrated. And so my question is, how can we address these problems? Because it's obviously not working traditionally through the traditional channels.
And I think, Terry, the Institute, you know, what we have to do is form together and talk about these things. The fact is that there's been a huge increase in spending to big American corporations and stimulus spending, and it has not reached small businesses. In fact, kind of just the opposite. And so you've got sort of the perfect storm that's hitting right right where we live, and that is, you know, capital is restricted, and then all these increased burdens, you know, whether it's regulatory on healthcare it's taxes, it's, you know, card checks. These are all things that we're dealing with, and I think we're just now beginning to take note of the size of the problem, and now we need to come together and figure out how to take action steps, and that's where Terry and the Institute come in.
Our next caller, we'll try to unmute you here and get you in the queue. Hello? Our next caller is up. Hello?
Nancy Hyde.
Nancy Hyde.
Okay, Oklahoma City. I wasn't sure if that was me.
It's you. You're up.
Okay, I have a CPA firm. I deal with about 300 small businesses. And what I'd like to focus on would be educational efforts to develop our young leaders, our younger employees, how to bring them along quickly, because we have a lot of baby boomers. We do not have people in the middle. And we need to develop them with some skills that they have not learned. Skills that are non-email, you know, personal interaction, those kind of things, and then getting them into being leaders. Other thing I see is education of women business owners and other businesses, how to monitor accounts receivable, how to understand their financials, how to build equity in their companies, how to spend less than what they make so that they really understand their financial statements.
Terry, I think that's for you.
Thank you, Nancy. Those are good suggestions. They are kind of, some of those are work ethic suggestions, and I think that certainly needs to take place in the younger generation today. And certainly the communication. I mean, if I have to get something to work that has a technology in it, I go to my 10-year-old granddaughter, and she can fix it immediately. But the communication skills may be somewhat lacking. So those are the kinds of things, Nancy, that I think you're talking about, we'll certainly take note of that. And we're taking notes on all of this, by the way, so we can go back and really look at what's out there that we need to be talking about. And, Marcia, I didn't say anything about your comment, but I really want to thank you for pulling out, you know, so many different things that are facing women business owners today, all small business owners today. And these are things that we need to be talking about, need to be communicating and talking about how they are impacting the small business community, and I appreciate your statements. We'll go to the next caller. I think, is our next caller unmuted? I believe she is. Hello?
Hi, Terry, it's June. Am I up next?
You're up next.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't sure. My name is June Ressler. I live in New Orleans, Louisiana, and Houston, Texas. I've owned my oil and gas service company for 14 years. I'm not a small business anymore, and I had a whole bunch of things to say. I pretty much agree with a lot of everybody, what everybody's been saying, but it's encouraging to me to hear that we're all kind of saying the same thing, which is, we do really need to unite as women. I think that since we now are the dominant sex, where more women are graduating from college than men, there are many more women starting their own businesses now. I feel that we're the driving force of the economy, and there's no reason that we can't all get together and work together. I've been in a situation in the oil and gas industry right now that I'm sure all of you remember has been really horrendous, and trying to deal with some frustrations of government regulation and trying to figure out a way to get to them so that people like me can be heard and be a part of the new policies that they're making, and it's just such a closed door. I have no clue even how to get started, but I really feel that the government would benefit by talking to people like me that are the people that are employing people in this industry before they make policies and procedures that may or may not include things that we do. So I guess my question is how do you break down that brick wall?
Well, June, you know, I think that's what our Power Tools for Women Business Owners training was doing initially when we formed the Institute in 2007, and that is working with women business owners to make sure they knew how to put their own grassroots network together. You know, how it's more impactful if you have a grassroots network of 10 or 20 women business owners in your community that can get together and talk about the issues that are impacting you, and then go talk about that with others and go meet with your elected officials, no matter what their party stripe is, and talk about your business and what your business is doing in your community and the numbers of people that you're employing. We also did a lot of education on, you know, writing letters to the editor and writing opinion editorials and those kinds of things, and our training in power tools. And so we're looking now at doing more of that, and also talking about social media and, you know, the Twittering and all the new things that everyone's doing today to get their message out on things. So public policy is extremely important to every business, and you don't have to be political. It's public policy. It's not politics and it's not political. It's public policy. And the education component of that, I believe, is critical to all small business owners. June, thank you for your comments. We'll go to our next caller. And I think this area code, I'm having to look at area codes, you guys, to try to figure out who's calling. And I think the next one up is Victoria Braden, from what I can tell from the area code. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Victoria? Hello? We may have to go to our next one. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, who do we have up?
Hi, this is Mary Hornick from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, Mary.
And I am a micro business. Actually, I have started mine during the downturn. I am a baby boomer, and a lot of the women business owners that I am working with are pretty much in the same category as I am. I'm seeing more and more baby boomer women who have raised families and trying to switch over to the business world, which is a real bridge there that's kind of hard to overcome. My thing is trying to get women to understand that the economic situation that we have been in the last few years is something that is not going to be the same way. We have to look at things in a different manner. We have to kind of downscale a little bit, because we cannot continue to have the credit crunch and things that we have had, or not permits. So much credit crunch as credit available, and we have got to learn to work within our means. My business is a bookkeeping business. I'm a certified bookkeeper, and I am working basically with small business women owners, but even just small businesses, which I do have both, and I'm seeing the same thing amongst the men and the women as far as credit available and people having to scale back. And education, though, would be one of the most important things that we need in Kentucky, because throughout our state there are still very many repressed women, you know, who have absolutely no business knowledge at all.
Okay, thank you for your comments, Mary. One of the reasons why it's important that we get a lot of people on the phone, that we're able to meet and talk around breakfast meetings, and it's good sometimes to listen to what other people's solutions are and also what their obstacles are. We only have time for maybe two more quick comments, and then I want to close out with some information for all of you. So let me see if we can go to the next caller. Do I have someone else on? Hello? Hello? Next caller?
Who is the next caller?
Are you it?
Is it me?
Maybe it is. Who am I?
Oh, my goodness, it is. It's Francine Manilow in Chicago.
Hi.
I didn't hear any cue or anything, so I apologize.
Okay, you're up.
Oh, thank you. Okay, very quickly, it's very interesting to hear all this. We talked, Susan, you first talked about all the global problems, and then it all comes down to where we are, what our local problems are. And I find that there are always obstacles. There always have been obstacles, especially if you're an entrepreneur. But successful entrepreneurs have always found a way around it. So I really like your idea about having these breakfast meetings. I hope that we'll see more in other cities as well. One little point that I'm doing now to find a way around that wall is I do have an excellent line of credit, and it is true that some of the banks are not renewing lines of credit, no matter how good your company credit and your personal credit may be. So it was suggested to me that I take X amount of dollars out just in case and just put it in a savings account. So that's one suggestion. But thank you for allowing me to be part of this. I'm very anxious to get together at one of your breakfast meetings and let's all find the solutions. But as everybody said, there's no doubt about it. It takes us to be united, and we have to start in our own city, in our own backyard. And I would very strongly suggest to everybody who's on this call to start by looking for a vendor or a supplier who is also a woman-owned business.
Thank you, Francine.
That's a good point, Francine. I think that's a great starting point. I also wanted to take up on your idea. Whomever is on the call and is interested, you know, let's keep the conversation going. If you'd like an event in your city, let Terry know. You know, who would you like to hear from? You know, that kind of thing. It would really help. We need to take the next step from this and make it grow.
Okay. One other caller. Let's try to take one more call.
This is Joan Schluter from New Mexico.
Hi, Joan.
I have a quick question. As you know, Terry, there's a very tight group in New Mexico, a lot of women business owners that are very politically savvy. One of the things that we're having difficulty with, of course, we all want less regulation. But what we're finding is there's more regulation, and our legislators are saying, well, this is going in, to the National Labor Relations Board. We can't do anything about this. This is going to some other board. I think that Marcia mentioned the card check and June mentioned regulations. What happens when we go to our legislators and they say, well, that's regulation? You know, how do you get to somebody that's on the National Labor Relations Board, for an example?
Terry?
Well, Joan, I think that there are certainly people that you can talk to. This is another educational component that, you know, we can't advocate for a, quote, regulation or advocate against a, quote, regulation. But we can certainly educate on the regulation. And getting to your labor relations board in your local area or at the national level will take a lot of strategic planning and a lot of
really networking and making the right contact that you'll need to make. That's kind of an educational thing. And we talk about that in our Power Tools training of how to make the connections to powerful leaders that you then can personally go and sit down and talk to. It's not the institute that's doing that, but it's important that you have the knowledge and that you have the education around public policy to be able to go do those things. As I've said before at the beginning of this conversation, we're all about education. We do not endorse candidates. We do not endorse legislation. Our objective is to make sure that women are empowered economically, socially, and politically. And one way to do that is through our Power Tools training. We were going to stop at the top of the hour, and I see that we have 5 minutes left before we get to the top of the hour. So let me take one more question or comment, and then we'll wrap up because I have some information I want to give you at the end of the call. So let's see if we can take this next call.
Hi, Terry. This is Desma Marie Coleman.
Hello, Desma.
How are you?
I'm good. You?
Absolutely wonderful.
Good.
One of the things that strikes me is that as we're gathering this information to give back to women, do we have a handle on how much banking we as women do?
Oh.
And is there a possible consideration for not necessarily starting a new bank, but combining our forces? Again, we keep talking about unity, but combining our forces behind a banking institution or a group that is definitely user-friendly towards women. I think that we keep talking about capital and access to capital, but we're fragmented and we're scattered across the country. If there's some information that we can gather as we're talking about, relaying that information in Power Tools that, you know, here's statistics we pull together and we'd like to make sure that women are aware of their power.
Mm-hmm.
As a unified force versus we're all scattered in our small little locations and struggling to grab a little piece of the pie. Just something I'd like to throw out there for consideration for us to look into.
Sure. Susan, do you have anything you want to comment on that?
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think there have been efforts at that before that haven't gone anywhere, but I think we're at an interesting time where we're our options are running out. So maybe, timing is everything. So
I agree, Desma. Great suggestion. How much banking do we do as women business owners? And having that kind of data is very powerful information. We have a Center for Women's Business Research that does research on a number of different issues. And so having a full-blown research on the banking that women entrepreneurs do as a unit could be extremely powerful, and certainly the media would be very interested in that as well. Let me wrap this up. I think it's been a very interesting, dynamic discussion. We will send all of you a recap of the discussion and pull out the nuggets of wisdom and suggestions. We will also send you more information on the breakfast meetings. We're putting together a survey online that we will get out to you later this week, and we hope every one of you will click on the link and participate. The bottom line, at the end of August, early September, we'll have data, education suggestions from our breakfast meetings, and more that we want to share with you so we can develop our plan to move forward from all the input that we've received from this call and from the breakfast meetings following up in August. Thank you so much for participating today. Thank you, Susan, for spending the time with us today. We appreciate you and your brain power. All of you who did not get to ask a question or make a suggestion, all of you have my email. Feel free to send me an email with any other ideas or suggestions you have, and we'll make sure we get them into these notes. Thank you all very, very much, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Terry.